Everyone knows how hard it is to deal with a problem without people misunderstanding each other, getting angry or upset, and taking things personally. You know that, don't you? And I've just read the first lines of chapter 2 of Getting to Yes, a book that I've had on my shelf for years because it was one of the required reading texts in my university degree on communication, and this was the conflict management module. It's a classic book by Roger Fisher and William Ury. Now, they know how to negotiate in terms of conflict management between entire continents and countries, as well as individuals. But I'm going to flip this a bit and talk about negotiating in the way that they recommend, a particular kind of negotiation, which I'll get to in a minute, negotiating with yourself. So when you are in those very self-squashing, self-doubt spirals of negative thoughts wallowing around that you just can't get out of, this is a way of actually becoming an expert negotiator and negotiating with those thoughts, those emotions, and getting to a place of enlightenment. Does that sound like a fabulous idea? Yes. So stay listening. I'm Tricia Lewis, host of Self-Belief Unsquashed. In this short episode, I'm going to give you an actual practical tool to stop that spiraling that we get into when we've been triggered in some way. Let's take an example. You've been at some social or business networking-y type event, and you've come away saying to yourself, "Oh gosh, I was so unrelaxed, I wasn't myself, I didn't show my personality, I was scared to say anything in case I upset anybody, I was being really, really dull, people probably wouldn't take me seriously either. Oh, why do I do this?" So that's not a very helpful place to stay in, is it? Because you're not going to do anything different, you're just going to beat yourself up and fuel that self-doubt. Don't want that. Okay, so if you recognize any kind of moment where you're going into those inner scripts, if you like, then this is a really useful way to approach them. I mentioned the book Getting to Yes. The main thrust of this book is that instead of using hard or soft negotiation techniques, they recommend principled negotiation. And what does that involve? It involves separating the people from the problem, focusing on interests, not positions, and other things. But those are the two I'm going to focus on and flip into. Rather than negotiating with another person or another country or organization, it's negotiating with your thoughts and emotions. Separate the people from the problem. Focus on interests, not positions. Now, before we go any further, this is just another form of what is called distanced self-talk. It's a way of taking yourself out of yourself. I mean, we could talk about self, of course, and we could talk about Buddhism and all sorts of things, but let's not confuse this episode. It's very practical what I want to give you, this tool. This is a way of just almost talking to yourself. So in the form of distance self-talk, I will be saying, "Tricia, is there any validity to what you're actually going on about here? Has anybody actually said you're boring, etc., etc.?" You can also adopt the detective mindset, which is one of my favorites, and I go on about this. You become the detective on yourself. You put everything out on the forensics table. You look for clues, you look for connections. And again, it's just another way of stopping yourself from drowning in this inner mess, this spaghetti of emotions. Don't Don't forget, we're all primed to go to the negative stuff. That's a survival technique. So you're very human when this self-doubt spiral is fueled by all this negative stuff. Right. Anyway, this form of distance self-talk is you becoming the negotiator. And not only just a negotiator, an expert negotiator who understands principled negotiation techniques. Right, so the first thing I mentioned was separate the people from the problem. And the best way to illustrate this is to use the story that Urey and Fisher give in their book. A union leader says to his men, "All right, who called the walkout?" Jones steps forward. "I did. It was that bum foreman, Campbell, again. That was the fifth time in 2 weeks he sent me out of our group as a replacement. He's got it in for me, and I'm tired of it. Why should I get all the dirty work?" Later, the union leader confronts Campbell. "Why do you keep picking on Jones? He says you've put him on replacement detail 5 times in 2 weeks. What's going on?" Campbell replies, "I picked Jones because he's the best. I know I can trust him to keep things from fouling up in a group without its point man. I send him on replacement only when it's a key man missing. Otherwise, I'd send Smith or someone else." You see what happened here? You see that misunderstanding? Those assumptions that were made by the angry Jones, and how that would just knock on and knock on and knock on. So what they needed to do, people who were trying to solve this problem, was separate the people from the actual problem. So how on earth do you apply this to the scenario that I gave, where you're in this tumbling self-doubt spiral after being at an event where you felt you just were not showing your true self and you're now worried that no one will take you seriously or even remember you? And you're probably now extrapolating out to much wider worlds and generally having a sense of, I'll never be any good at anything. I'll never be taken seriously. I might as well give up. You know how we tend to go into these spirals. So you'll start tipping over into the spiral because that's inevitable, because we just do that. Okay, what you want to do is to be able to hold on to the edge and pull yourself back up from that very quickly so you don't tumble down further and take longer to climb back out. I mean, that can take hours, days, sometimes weeks. How do we separate the people from the problem? Well, the people is you, and the problem is your fear, your perception. So the first thing you do is say, how valid is this? Let's look at what the problem is. Let's look at this from maybe the point of view of the other people at that event. Do you think that there's another way of thinking about how they reacted to you? Do you think that they were also having similar thoughts? Put yourself in their shoes. Remember that we do all go to the negative thoughts very quickly. That's human, that's survival. So that's probably what's happening here. But let's think about other situations where you shine. You know, what's going on there? How come you're such a completely different person there to there? Maybe you're not such a different person. Maybe you just think you are. Now, I could go on like this for ages, but you're going to have this kind of negotiation where you separate yourself from the actual problem. And there's a very good way of doing that, which applies to so many situations like this, which is to go to the five whys exercise. You put the problem there, you put your reaction to it there, and you question it. And with every answer that you give, you question that answer. And with that answer, you question it again until you've got to a place where you'll probably say, yeah, do you know what? This is absolute rubbish. Why? This doesn't even make any sense. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you're denying your feelings, because that would be a bad idea. Because if you push everything down and try and pretend it's not there, guess what? It tends to pop up and pop up quite like a volcano from time to time. So that's not a good idea. This is definitely about just putting things out, as I say, on the forensics table and dissecting them and just thinking, yeah, that's a bit of baggage, isn't it? Or as I call it, it might be one of the fibs that holds you back, the fear, the illusion, the baggage. Perhaps you're trying too hard. Perhaps you, from some baggage or illusion or fear, think that you need to be more than in some way. Otherwise, you're invisible. All those things you can have great fun with. But let's move on to the second part of principled negotiation, which is focus on interests, not positions. Again, I'm going to give you the story that they use to illustrate this in the book. Consider the story of two men quarrelling in a library. One wants the window open, the other wants it closed. They bicker back and forth about how much to leave it open. A crack halfway, three quarters of the way, no solution satisfies them both. Enter the librarian. She asks one why he wants the window open. To get some fresh air. She asks the other why he wants it closed, to avoid the draft. After thinking a minute, she opens wide a window in the next room, bringing in fresh air without a draft. Isn't that glorious? What a fabulous librarian. So she focused on the interest, not the position. So rather than thinking, oh, you need fresh air. Oh, you don't want a draft. Oh, gosh, the window's right there. If I open it too much, there'll be a draft. If I don't open it, it'll be stuffy. She thought, well, hang on a minute. How can we get fresh air? Let's think wider about this. Let's get out of this kind of stuck position that these two people have got themselves in. Oh, well, we just need to open a window a bit further away, because that way the air will circulate without being directly close to the person who's worried that they might be in a draft. Oh my gosh, it sounds so simple. So how do you apply this to the scenario to stop yourself tipping and tumbling down this self-doubt spiral? Well, you want to say, what do I gain by continuing in this stuck position where I'm just repeating these negative thoughts about myself, where I'm saying negative things about myself, where I'm projecting even into the future with negative things about the way I'm going to be in the future? How do I benefit from that? And having thought about that, which is probably quite a short list, how would I benefit from taking a different perspective? What is actually going on here? How could I perhaps deal with this by looking at it from other people's perspectives, from different options that I haven't perhaps thought of? And how would that then benefit not just me, but other people? So you would start thinking, well, actually, I do need to work on the fear I've got of walking into a group of strangers. I suspect everybody else there has got similar fears, but they're just dealing with it in different ways. We all do. I've no idea what's going on in everybody else's head, but we've all got a desire to turn up, to show up, and for people to see us as the people we want to be seen as. That's quite natural. I suspect everybody's thinking that. So let me think, let me ask why. Why am I not showing up? Rather than, oh, I'm not showing up, I'm useless. And you just continue like this. The question why, of course, is the huge one. I'm going to end with a few quotes that I think just pull this together and will continue to make you think in this principled negotiation way. These are quotes from another book, which is Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman, also well used and marked up on my shelf. Emotions that wax too intensely or for too long undermine our stability. So when you're stuck in this self-doubt spiral with this heaving mess of horrible sadness, anger, all of that stuff. Not good. Brooding fuels anger's flames, but seeing things differently douses those flames. Because a lot of this can lead to anger. What might feel like a sort of rather weak, pathetic state of self-doubt is only a few millimetres away from anger. Trust me. And this one I love. The worrying mind spins on. So this reminds us of the spiral, doesn't it? The worrying mind spins on in an endless loop of low-grade melodrama on a set of concerns. Sorry, one set of concerns leading on to the next and back again. So it's a similar thing to a spiral. It's ping pong. It's, yeah, it's all of that. This is really about what we come back to every time, isn't it? Self-awareness, taking a step out and questioning. And in fact, those are the steps that came up when there was research done on worry and calming worry by somebody called Borkovec. I'll put the links around here. I'll put the links to all these books and quotes around here. And basically, number one, self-awareness. So in other words, recognize your triggers, your assumptions, your illusions, your fears, all of that. Number two, take a critical stance. Healthy skepticism is what we're talking about. Exactly. Do the forensics. Adopt the detective mindset. Be the principled negotiator. But there is one other thing that came up in that research, which is relax your body. It's about really realizing what's going on physically when you're in these negative spirals of self-doubt and learning how to do those lovely, very simple, but we have to keep reminding ourselves about things like some deliberate deep breathing, dancing, singing, walking, skipping, embracing our inner child, and just generally smiling, because all of those are sending positive messages through our body. And after all, our brain is not quite as up on the exact details of all the nuances of our little inner thoughts as we might think. It's just picking up signals. So when you're in these self-doubt spirals, it sees you as being in some kind of danger. So it'll probably keep you trapped in here whilst you keep sending it those messages. I could go on for ages. I already have. So I'm going to stop now and just give it a go. Become the expert negotiator and use the wonderful principled negotiation techniques. I hope you enjoyed that and I hope you give it a go. Do let me know. And if you want to know more about my unsquashing mission, head over to trishalewis.com. Remember, I've got a TEDx called Beware the Self-Squashing Prophecy and a book called The Mystery of the Squashed Self. So you can see there's a bit of a theme going on there. Till the next episode, stay curious and unsquashed.